Shalom and welcome to Rambam Yomi. This is Rabbi Mati Novik. Join me as we learn the Rambam's Mishneh Torah, one perek each day. Today we'll be learning Hilchot Ishut Perek Yud Bet. Now that we have finished discussing the husband's essential obligation of ketubah, his financial commitment in case of divorce or death, our perek and the following two prakim begin to examine the more expansive concept of ketubah, which includes both additional obligations as well as privileges. In exchange for several responsibilities toward his wife, which the husband is required to accept upon himself during the marriage, he obtains rights to certain parts of her property and her income during the marriage. Most of this entire arrangement is rabbinic in origin, but there are three obligations whose source is in the Torah, and the Rambam begins the perek by listing these. Halacha Aleph, Keshenoseh Adam Isha, Bein betula, bein beula, bein gedola, bein ktana, achat bat Yisrael, v'achat hagiyoret o ameshuchraret, yitchayev la ba'asara dvarim, v'yizke ba'arba dvarim, v'asara, shlosha mehen min haTorah, ve'elu hen, she'era, kisuta ve'onata, she'era, elu mizonoteha, kisuta kemashmao, onata, lavo alea kederech kol haaretz. When a man marries any woman, regardless of age and a personal status, Bitula, Biula, Gioret, Mishuchreret, he accepts upon himself 10 obligations and obtains 4 types of monetary privileges. Of the 10 obligations, 3 have their source in the Torah, namely, providing her with food, mizonot, or she'er in the language of the Torah, clothing, ksut, and conjugal relations, ona. These 3 obligations collectively comprise a mitzvat lo ta'aseh, the first mitzvah we've encountered in Hilchot Ishut since the Tu'un Perek Aleph, based on the pasuk appearing in the context of Ama Ivriya, of She'ira, Kisuta, Vonata, Lo Yigra. He may not be deficient in providing to his wife food, clothing, and regular conjugal relations. Continuing in Halacha Bet, Vashiva midivrei sofrim, v'chulan tenai bei dinhein, ha'echad mehen ikar ha'ktuba, v'asha'ar hein ha'nikra'in tenai ktuba, ve'elu hein, לרפותה אם חלתה, ולפתותה אם נשבית, ולקוברה כשתמות, ולהיותה ניזונת מנכסיו, ויושבת בביתו אחר מותו כל זמן אלמנותה, ולהיות בנותיה ממנו ניזונות מנכסיו אחר מותו עד שיתארסו, ולהיות בניה הזכרים ממנו יורשים כתובתה יתר על חלקם בירושה שעם אחיהם. The remaining 7 obligations of the husband are מדרבנן, and they have the status of תנאי ביתן. This means that even in the absence of any explicit agreement to these obligations on the part of the two sides to the marriage, they are imposed upon the husband by Beit Din. The first of these is the ketubah itself, acceptance of a debt to the wife, which comes due in the event of divorce or the husband's death. The remaining 6 obligations are called the tana'ei ketubah, and the first 3 tana'ei ketubah are paying for her medical care, refuah, ransoming her if she is taken captive, pidyon, and burying her if she predeceases him, kavura. These 3 obligations, together with the first 3 Torah-mandated obligations of she'er ksut ve'ona, are the 6 ways a husband must provide for his wife during his lifetime, and they are the topics of this and the next 2 prakim. The final 3 tana'ei ketubah, which like the ketubah itself, take effect posthumously, are the following. 1. His wife, by then a widow, will be allowed to live in his home and receive money for food from his estate until she remarries. The details of this will be discussed in Perek Yud Chet. 2. His daughters from this wife will receive money for food from his estate until they get married. The last of the tana'ei ketubah is a mechanism to ensure that money or property brought into a marriage by the wife will be inherited only by her children and not those of other wives. We'll see more details of the last 2 tana'ei ketubah when we get to Perek Yud Tet. Halacha Gimel. V'arba shezoche behen kulam midivrei sofrim, ve'elu hein, liot ma'asei adea shelo, v'liot metziata shelo, v'shiye ochel peirot kol nechaseha b'chayeha. The 4 monetary rights enjoyed by the husband during the marriage are all rabbinic in origin, and they are the following portions of his wife's property. Her handiwork, ma'aseh adayim, like anything she sews or weaves and any income she makes from selling these items. Any lost object that she finds, mitziah. the proceeds of any property she brings into the marriage, perot, like wool growing on her sheep or produce growing from her field. And finally, he inherits her if she predeceases him, Yerusha. Like the 10 responsibilities from Halacha Bet, Halacha Hey says that these four privileges have the status of Tanai Beitin, and therefore they take effect at the moment of Nisuin, whether or not they are written down. The last of the four monetary rights, Yerusha, is different from the first three in that its origin is a drusha from a pasuk. The psukim in Parsha Pinchas, which describe the order of inheritance, make no mention of the husband. The relatives listed there as inheritors are blood relations, like son, daughter, brother, and uncle. But Chazal learned from the phrase, she'eiro hakarov elav, appearing there, that a husband inherits his wife. The Rambam nonetheless refers to this din as midivrei sofrim, but the Ravid in his Asaga here takes issue with this and insists that Yerushat Habal Devar Torah. It is not surprising that the Rambam, who, as we've seen, believes in general that dinim learnt from drushot are of lesser stature than those which are explicit in the psukim of the Torah, considers Yerushat Habal to be rabbinic, like the other three privileges of Maaseh Adayim, Metziah, and Perot. But there remains a conceptual question to ask about the opinion of the Rambam. What is the nature of the din of Yerushat Habal? For the Ravid, the answer is clear. In the words, Lish'eiro HaKarov Elav, appearing in the Parsha about inheritance, the Torah recognizes a woman's husband as her closest relative. Therefore, independent of any other monetary rights he has to her property, like Maaseh Adayim and Perot, he inherits her for a separate reason altogether. Inheritance goes to the closest living relative. For the Rambam, who believes that Yerushat Habal is rabbinic, we can ask, is this truly a din of inheritance based on family kinship, like for the Ravid, just on a rabbinic level rather than a Torah one? Or is the entire din of Yerushat Habal just another monetary right that a husband has in his wife's property, comparable to Maaseh Adayim and Perot? The Avnei Miluim suggests a very practical difference between these two understandings. If Yerushat Habal is based on the kinship of husband and wife, then it would be canceled only in the event of divorce. But if Yerushat Habal is a monetary right stemming from the marriage relationship, then it may end earlier, like if their marriage sours to the point that the husband refuses to allow the wife any benefit from his property. Our impression from Halacha Gimel, where Yerushat Habal appears together with the other three monetary rights, is that this din has nothing to do with kinship, but is rather a monetary right like the others. If this is the case, then the machloket between the Rambam and the Ravid is not just about whether Yerushat Habal is midoraita or midrabanan. Rather, it relates additionally to the fundamental nature of Yerushat Habal. However, we'll see when we get to Halacha Chtet that first impressions can be misleading, and the Rambam may in fact agree that Yerushat Habal is truly a form of inheritance and not merely a monetary right to his wife's property after she passes away. We note in passing that there is no din at all that a wife inherits her husband. As we saw in Halacha Bet, several of the Tanai Ketubah relate to financial commitments which take effect after the husband's death. But these are for very specific purposes only. The wife does not inherit her husband's property as a whole. His property is distributed according to the usual rules of inheritance, to his sons if he has sons, with the Bechor receiving a double portion, to his daughters if he has no sons, etc. Halacha Dalet. Va'o tiknu chachamim, shiyu maaseh yedei ha'isha keneged mezonoteha, ufidyonea keneged achilat perot nechaseha, ukvurata keneged yerushato lichtubata. Lefichach imamra ha'isha eini nizonet ve'eini osa shomina ve'ein kofinota. Aval im amar ha'bal eini zanech ve'eini notel klum maaseh yadayich, ein shomin lo. Shema lo yispekula maaseh yadea b'mezonotea. U'mipnei takana zo yechashvu ha'mezonot mitna'e ha'ktuba. Three of the four monetary rights listed in Halacha Gimel were specifically linked by Chazal to three of the responsibilities from Halacha Bet. This means that if the husband is freed from a certain responsibility for whatever legitimate reason, he also loses the corresponding privilege. The linkage is as follows. First, he gets her Maaseh Adayim in exchange for providing her with food, mizonot, or she'er in the language of the Torah. Therefore, the wife has the right to renounce her claim to mizonot, in exchange for which she gets to keep her Maaseh Adayim, eini nizonet v'niosa. But only she may initiate this arrangement. He may not, in general, say to her, keep your Maaseh Adayim and I won't feed you. He may, however, tell her to keep her masayadayim and sell them for food, and he will pay her whatever she needs for food beyond the value of the masayadayim. The other two linkages are that he gets peirot in exchange for his responsibility to redeem her from captivity, and he inherits her in exchange for his responsibility to see to it that she has a proper burial. A simple mnemonic device to remember these three pairs is to note the common opening letter, or very similar opening letters, in each pair of words. Masayadayim in exchange for mizonot, peirot in exchange for pidyon, and ketubah, that is, inheriting her property, which is typically listed in the ketubah, in exchange for kivura. Halacha vav. Hitna ha'bal, shlo yitchayev b'echad min ha'dvarim shu chaya behen, o shitna ta'isha, shlo yizkeh ha'bal b'echad min ha'dvarim shu zoche behen, hatnai kayam, chutz mishlosha dvarim she'ein hatnai mo'il behen, v'chol ha'matne alehen tna'u batel, ve'elu hein, onata, v'ikar ktubata, v'irushata. If the husband stipulates, that is, makes a tnai, as part of the nisuin, that he does not accept any of the 10 responsibilities from halacha bet, or if the wife stipulates that she does not yield to him any of the 4 monetary privileges from halacha gimel, then the tnai is valid, and the nisuin take effect without that responsibility or privilege. There are 3 exceptions to this rule, or really 2.5. The first we saw earlier in Parak Vav, and the Rambam repeats it in Halacha Zayin of our Parak. The responsibility of ona, conjugal relations, is a Torah requirement and is not monetary in nature, like she'er and ksut, and therefore the husband may not make any tenai about it. Kol ha-matne al-ma she-katub ba-Torah, tena'o batel. The second exception appears in Halacha Chet. Hitna ima lifchot meikar ktubata, o she-katav la matayim o mea ikar ktuba, v'chatva lo she-nitkabla mehem kach v'kach, v'ilo nitkabla, tena'o batel. If the husband tries to stipulate that the ikar ktubah should be less than the proper amount, 200 zuz for a betula and 100 zuz for a be'ula, or even if he commits in theory to the proper amount, but she relinquishes part of it by declaring that it is as if she received part of it already, ki'ilu hitkabalti, this is ineffective, because Chazal established that any husband who lives with his wife with a practical ketubah commitment of less than 200 zuz for a betula or 100 zuz for a be'ula is guilty of be'ilat zenut. The Nosei Kelim are troubled by this psak of the Rambam, because the Gemara in Masechet Ketubot seems to say that this din holds only according to the opinion that ketubah d'oraita, but not for the opinion of ketubah d'rabbanan. So how can the Rambam, who holds in general that ketubah derabanan, as we saw in the last parak, accept this ruling as halacha? The Lecha Mishnah has an interesting answer, which at first seems difficult to accept. He suggests that because Chazal decreed that anyone who maintains a wife without a ketubah is guilty of be'ilat zanut, the proper sum of a ketubah has the force of a din d'oraita. Furthermore, for purposes of tanai, this matter is considered isser rather than davar shebemamon, because the result of a deficient ketubah is that he is engaged in bilat zanut. That's an isser. Therefore, we revert to the rule that hamatne al-ma she-katub ba-Torah tena'o batel. The leap from ketubah derabanan to the conclusion that a couple without a full ketubah are engaged in bilat zanut mid-oraita seems hard to accept, until we recall our understanding from Perek Yud of the Rambam's opinion that ketubah midrabanan. The amount of the ketubah was determined by Chazal, but the concept of a ketubah is a Torah-mandated component of the commitment necessary for marriage. In other words, in determining the amounts of 200 zuz and 100 zuz, Chazal gave precise content to the Torah concept of a ketubah, and therefore any smaller amount can be considered bilat zanut min ha-Torah. Halacha tet. Hitnet imo achar shenisa shelo yirashena tena'o batel, va'af al-pi shirushat ha-bal midivrei sofrim, asu chizuk lidivreihem keshel Torah, v'chol tnai sheba yirusha batel, af al-pi shuvamon shne'mar ba v'chukat mishpat. The third exception to the rule that one may stipulate away any obligation or privilege is the din of inheritance, Yerushat HaBal. The exception here is only partial. After the Nisuin, neither side may make a tenai that the husband will not inherit his wife. we'll see in Perek Chaf Gimel that this Tanai may be made before Nisuin. As we saw in Halacha Gimel, the Rambam believes Yerushat HaBaal to be rabbinic. But nonetheless, Asu Chizuk L'Divrehem Keshel Torah. Chazal gave their Takana the force of Torah law, and therefore any Tanai is invalid. But even if it has the force of Torah law, isn't a Tanai effective in a Davarship and Mamon, a monetary matter like inheritance? The Rambam explains in a brief line an idea which we will come back to much later in Hilchot Nachalot. Inheritance may seem like a monetary matter, but actually it isn't. The Torah refers to Yerusha in Parsha Pinchas as Chukat Mishpat, suggesting that it does not have the flexibility typically associated with financial affairs. Recall that back in Halacha Gimel, we asked the conceptual question of how to view Yerushat HaBaal as a genuine aspect of Yerusha, or as one of many monetary rights the husband has to his wife's property, which happens to become relevant after her passing. The Rambam's application here of the Gzeirat HaKatuv of Chukat Mishpat to Yerushat HaBaal is a sure sign that he views this as fundamentally a type of Yerusha based on family kinship, unlike the impression we had after learning Halacha Gimel. In an interesting hasaga here, the Ravid rejects the entire idea that the words Chukat Mishpat imply that Yerusha is not a Davar Sheba Mamun. He gives a much simpler reason why no Tanai may be made on Yerusha. It lies entirely in the future, and right now the inheritor has no connection to the property he stands to inherit. Yerusha is therefore considered a Davar Shelo Bala Olam, and so any attempted kinyan on it is entirely ineffective. Recall that we encountered back in Perek Zayin the concept of Davar Shelo Bala Olam in a very different context. There seems to be a fundamental debate between the Rambam and the Ravid about the nature of Yerusha in general. Is it merely a set of rules governing a future distribution of assets? Or is Yerusha a status and relationship which exists in the present, even if the practical ramification will only be felt in the future? The Ravid seems to take the first approach, and therefore considers Yerusha a Davar Shelo Bala Olam, while the Rambam adopts the second approach and has a very different reason why no Tanai is effective in Yerusha. Halacha Yud. Kama mizonot poskim la'isha, poskim la lechem shtei sudot b'chol yom, suda benonit shal kol adam be'ota ha'ir she'no lo chole v'lo gargaran, u'me'oto ma'achal shel anshei ota ha'ir, im chitim, chitim, v'im sorim, sorim, v'chein orez odochan o misha'ar minin shnagu bahem. The topic of the remainder of the perek is the husband's obligation to his wife of mizonot, food, or a monetary allowance for food. A husband must provide his wife with enough bread for two meals each day, in accordance with standard eating habits of the time, in the amount fit for an average person who is neither sick nor a glutton. The bread must be made of whatever grain most people eat in that city, like wheat, barley, or rice. Continuing in Halacha Yud, ufoskin la parperet lechol bahapat, kigon kitniot o yirakot v'chayotze behen, v'shemen la'achila, v'shemen la'dakat haner, uferot, u'ma'at yayin lishtot im haya min hag makom shishu anashim yayin, ufoskin la shalosh seudot l'shabat u'basar o dagim k'min hag makom, v'notein la b'chol shabat v'shabat ma'a kesef litzracheha, kigon pruta l'chabes o l'merchatz v'chayotze behen. He must also provide her with food to accompany the bread of each meal, like beans or vegetables, as well as with oil, both for consumption and for lighting candles, fruit, and wine, in a place where women typically drink wine. For Shabbat, he must provide three meals, which include meat and fish, and he must give her a ma'ah of silver each week. Recall that a ma'ah is 1/6 of a dinar, to use for other basic needs, like laundry and bathing. In Halacha Dalet, we saw that the husband receives her Maaseh Adayim in exchange for his obligation of Mizonot. But her Maaseh Adayim were typically worth more than his expenditure on Mizonot. And this additional Ma'ah Kesef was established in order to cover the difference. Therefore, writes the Tur, if the husband doesn't give his wife the Ma'ah Kesef, she may keep the portion of her Maaseh Adayim which exceeds the value of the Mizonot she receives. The next several halachot establish a few more important points. The amounts in Halacha Yud represent a minimum, which must be provided even by a husband of very limited means. But if the husband is wealthy, he must provide his wife with more food and with food of higher quality, all in accordance with his wealth. He is not obligated to eat together with her if he doesn't wish to, except for the Friday night Shabbat meal every week. If the wife leaves over some of her mizonot, this leftover amount is returned to the husband. Some Nosei Kelim on the Shulchan Aruch limit this din to a case where the wife naturally needs less to eat than the average person. But if the wife intentionally reduces her food consumption in order to use the remainder of her allowance for other purposes, then the leftover belongs to her. If the husband is a Kohen, he may give his wife some of her mizonot in the form of truma. A Kohen's wife is permitted to eat truma, but not more than half, because eating truma requires the extra effort of preventing it from becoming tameh and eating it only when she herself is in a state of tahara. Halacha Yudalid. Kishem shadam chayav bimzonot ishto, kachu chayav bimzonot banav uvnotav aktanim ad shiyu b'nei shesh shanim. Mikan va'elach, ma'achilan ad shiyagdilu kitakanat chachamim. Vim lo ratza, goarin bo, umachlimin oto, ufotzrin bo. Im lo ratza, machrizin alav batzibur, va'omrin ploni achzarihu, ve'no rotze lazun banav, va'rei hu pachut me'of tamei, shuzan et efrochav. Just as one is obligated to feed his wife, he is obligated to feed his young children until the age of six. From the Rambam's equation between these two obligations, it sounds like the obligation to feed children up to age six is min ha-Torah, just like the obligation of mizonot to one's wife. And this is indeed the opinion of several Rishonim, including the Ran. From that age on, he is required midrabanan to feed them until they reach adulthood, that is, age 12 or 13. The Gemara records that this was one of the takanot established by the Sanhedrin when they convened in Usha, in the period after the Bar Kokhba revolt. If someone doesn't want to provide for his children beyond the age of six, then Beit Din may not force him to do so by seizing property, but they may apply pressure in the form of rebuke and exhortation to get him to change his mind. They may even shame him by announcing in public that he is worse than a bird, who at least sees to it that its chicks are fed. Halacha Tedvav adds that if the husband is wealthy enough to give tzedakah, then Beit Din, who in general have the power to coerce a person to give tzedakah in accordance with his means, force him to direct part or all of his tzedakah toward providing for his young children. As the saying goes, charity begins at home. The obligation to provide for one's children only until the age of six, and even after Takanat Usha only until age 12 or 13, reflects a reality in which children were put to work at a very young age. Modern poskim agree that in a society like our own, in which children are expected to study for at least several more years, the obligation of the parents to provide for them extends longer. In 1976, the chief rabbinate of Israel, under the leadership of Rosh Shlomo Goren, who was Rav Rashi at the time, issued a halachic ruling obligating a parent to financially support his children until the age of 18. Halacha Tet Zayin. Mi shehalach limdina acheret, uva ishto levei din lidbo abizonot, shlosha chodashim arishonim miyom alichato, ein poskin la behen mizonot, chazakahi she'ein adam maniach beito rekan. Mikan va'elach poskin la mizonot. Vim hayulo nechasim, beitin yordin l'nechasav u'mochrin l'mizonoteha, ve'ein mechashvinima al maseyadea anshiavo bala, imatza she'asat, harei ze shalom. The next several halachot discuss the mizonot of a woman whose husband is away from home. For 3 months after he leaves, his wife may not demand of Beit Din to provide her with food, because the assumption is that when one leaves home, he leaves behind enough food for 3 months. After this period, Beit Din determines how much she needs from his mizonot and sells property belonging to her husband in order to cover these costs. They do not take any of her maaseh yadayim in exchange. Only once the husband returns may he demand her maaseh yadayim or their proceeds. The wife may also opt to sell property of her husband herself rather than go to Beit Din. If she does so, then she is believed that she only sold what was necessary for her mizonot and is not required to take a shvuah to this effect unless the husband requests it upon his return. If, when the husband returns, he claims that he had left her mizonot and demands repayment for his sold land, Beit Din requires her to take a shvuah that he did not, in fact, leave her any mizonot. Halacha Yud Zayin adds that Beit Din will also sell the property of the absent husband in order to feed his young children up to the age of 6, but not older. As we saw in Halacha Yud Dalid, Beit Din may apply pressure to induce a person to provide for his children older than 6, but they may not seize his property for this purpose. Halacha Yud Tet. Halach bala v'lavta v'achla, kishyavo chayav l'shalem. Amad echad midat atzmo, v'zana mishalo, im yavo habal, eino chayav l'shalem lo, v'areze ibed et ma'otav, v'pnei shalo tzivahu lizuna, v'hi lo lavta mimenu. If rather than going to Beit Din or selling property, the wife borrowed money to buy food during her husband's absence, then he must repay her debts when he returns. If in this situation, the husband claims upon his return that he left her mizonot and therefore doesn't need to repay her debts, then he is the one who must take a shvua and Beit Din that he did so, and the debt remains on her. If she didn't sell land or borrow money, but instead someone else, let's call him Reuven, provided her with food, then Reuven may not demand repayment from the husband upon his return, because the husband did not ask Reuven to do this, nor did the wife borrow money from him. The phrase in the Mishnah describing what Reuven did is hiniach ma'otav al keren hatzvi. He put his money on the antlers of a deer, meaning that he spent it without any solid guarantee that he would be paid back. This phrase has become an idiom in modern Hebrew to refer to any speculative or risky investment. We summarize the rest of the halachot in the perek. A husband may tell his wife before he departs, keep your masei adayim in place of receiving mizonot. We saw in Halacha Dalid that he may not make this a permanent arrangement, but he may suggest it when he goes away. If she objects to this arrangement because she is concerned that her masei adayim will not suffice, then she must say so before he goes. Otherwise, she may not claim mizonot by going to court, selling his property, or borrowing money while he is away. The last couple of halachot in the perek discuss the case of a man who forbids his wife, through a neder, from receiving any benefit from his property. Halacha Chaf Gimel begins with the words, Hamadir et ishto mile hanotlo. What can be done in this scenario about the mizonot she is supposed to receive? Beit Din are willing to tolerate this type of situation for as long as 30 days. If by that time the period of the neder has not ended, and the husband has not done hatarat nedarim, then he must divorce his wife and pay her the full ketubah. During those 30 days, or less if the neder expires earlier, she uses the proceeds of her masei adayim to pay for food. If she needs anything beyond what is covered by those proceeds, then a friend of the husband's should be found to pay for the remainder. We end by noting that there is a machloket rishonim whether the husband can make this kind of neder at all. He owes his wife mizonot, and this debt represents a lien, or a shibud, on all of his property. Does he have the power to forbid to his wife property which is meshuba to her? The Gemara Masechet Ketubot says that he does not, and it offers a convoluted scenario to explain when a husband can in fact forbid his wife from receiving mizonot money from him. The two of them had agreed earlier that she would live off the proceeds of her masei adayim instead of receiving mizonot, and her masei adayim suffice for all the food that she generally eats in her husband's home. But once the husband makes the neder forbidding her from his property, she is forced to move back to her father's home, and in that home, the custom is to eat certain additional delicacies. Since the husband doesn't eat these delicacies, his property is not meshuba to pay for them, and therefore his neder forbids his wife from using his money to pay for these foods. Many Rishonim and the Shulchan Aruch accept this Gemara in its entirety, including that scenario, but the Rambam here rejects the Gemara and believes based on other sources that in fact a husband's neder is effective to forbid to his wife property which is meshuba to her. Therefore, the Rambam writes simply in Halacha Chaf Gimel, Hamadir et ishto mile hanotlo, without the need for any further elaboration.
Thank you for joining me in learning today's Perek of the Mishnah Torah. If you have any questions, comments, or ideas you'd like to share, I'd be happy to hear from you. Send me an email at mtorahyomi@gmail.com. That's M as in Mishnah, Torah, T-O-R-A-H, Yomi, Y-O-M-I, @gmail.com. Come back tomorrow as we continue with our next parak.